From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Ukraine seeking help to resist Russia's Crimea takeover, Muslim community leaders blasting peacekeepers in the CAR, Egypt sentencing Morsi supporters to death, plus early U.S. election predictions favoring Republicans. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu toured Russian military headquarters in Crimea on Monday as Russian forces seize Ukraine's last military base on the peninsula. Meantime, Ukraine's interim government acknowledges its outmanned and outgunned forces have been ordered to pull back from the Crimean Peninsula. This comes as Ukraine expresses alarm that Russia, which annexed Crimea last Friday, is poised to enter the Ukrainian mainland. VOA's Steve Herman reporting now from Kiev.
While there are hopes an emergency group of seven meeting in The Hague can use diplomacy to defuse the crisis, Ukrainian officials say their country's northern, southern, and eastern borders are increasingly under threat, but their military is ready to defend the homeland. Ukraine National Security and Defense Council Secretary Andriy Harubiy says there are about 100,000 members of Russia's military poised along Ukraine borders.
На кордонах з Україною продовжує перебувати.
The cabinet minister contends that despite assurances from Russian officials that they are engaged in routine drills, in reality, those forces are on full alert. Potterby also says the interim government has given Russia an ultimatum to free Ukrainian officers who are being held in Crimea after Russian forces seized nearly 200 Ukrainian military installations. Hours earlier, Ukraine's acting president, Oleksandr Turchynov, confirmed all of the country's military units and their families had been instructed to leave Crimea because they are under real threat. Some, perhaps the majority of personnel in some key units, according to sources in Kiev, are staying behind to join the Russian military. Most prominent among them is Denis Berezovsky, the former commander-in-chief of Ukraine's Navy, who has been named a deputy commander of Russia's Black Sea Fleet. He now faces treason charges in Ukraine, where the military establishment is branding him a traitor. Retired Captain Volodymyr Voloshin is the president of the Union of Ukraine Marines and a former Ukrainian Naval Chief of Staff. Voloshin says he cannot really understand what compelled his colleague to make such a decision. He recalls that after the breakup of the Soviet Union, many Ukrainian officers were accused of betrayal for taking an oath to defend Ukraine. The loss of Crimea, including the Ukrainian military bases, the Navy's flagship and only submarine, are humiliating to Ukraine, whose forces demonstrated little, if any, resistance in the face of overwhelming odds against them. But former Ukrainian Foreign Minister Boris Tarasyuk says Washington and London have to take a share of the blame for the loss of Crimea.
The United States and the United Kingdom, two countries, I dare to mention them by name, they did not implement their commitments according to the Budapest Memorandum on National Security Guarantees to Ukraine in connection with Ukraine joining Non-Proliferation Nuclear Treaty as a non-nuclear state.
The 1994 political agreement was signed by the Russian Federation, the United States, and the United Kingdom. Steve Herman, VOA News, Kiev.
The group of seven industrialized nations has suspended Russia's membership, that in response to its annexation of Crimea. The action was called for by President Obama, who began a tour of Europe on Monday in an effort to isolate Russia. VOA's Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president and has this report from The Hague.
President Obama's official purpose for coming to the Netherlands is to attend the Nuclear Security Summit, but Russia's annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula became the main focus. Shortly after arriving Monday, Mr. Obama briefly toured Amsterdam's Rijksmuseum before speaking to reporters.
Europe and America are united in our support of the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian people. We're united in imposing a cost on Russia for its actions so far.
Those words turned into actions on the sidelines of the nuclear summit later in the day when Mr. Obama hosted an emergency meeting of G7 leaders. In a joint statement after the meeting, the group condemned the Russian-sponsored referendum for Crimea to secede from Ukraine and what it described as Russia's illegal attempts to annex the region. The leaders said they are ready to intensify sanctions they already have imposed if Russia does not change course. A senior U.S. official said continued aggression, including incursions into eastern and southern Ukraine, could trigger deeper sanctions against banking, defense, and other key sectors of the Russian economy. Concerns have mounted following reports that Russia is massing troops along the Ukrainian border. Earlier, Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes told reporters Russia's future in the G7 group is in doubt.
We believe that there's no reason for the G7 countries to engage with Russia going forward based on its behavior.
The leaders have canceled their plans to hold an upcoming G8 meeting in the Russian Black Sea resort of Sochi and will instead hold a G7 meeting without Russia in Brussels. That is where Mr. Obama heads next. He will call on the EU and NATO to step up support for Ukraine's government. President Obama is also looking beyond Europe for support in his effort to isolate Russia. On the sidelines of the nuclear summit Monday, Mr. Obama met with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Beijing has questioned Russia's actions in Ukraine. In a rare move, China last week abstained from a UN Security Council resolution declaring Crimea's Russian-sponsored secession referendum illegal. Going into Monday's meeting with Mr. Obama, President Xi noted the two leaders have stayed in close communication and have been in agreement on a number of important issues. A U.S. official said the Chinese leader affirmed that the principle of independence and sovereignty of nations is fundamental. China wants to see a diplomatic solution to the crisis, but is not considering sanctions. The nuclear summit has brought together 53 nations to talk about global denuclearization. Although the focus has largely turned to Ukraine, there were some successes Monday in efforts to reduce nuclear stockpiles. U.S. and Japanese officials announced that Japan will hand over hundreds of kilograms of highly enriched uranium that it has held for decades. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, The Hague.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
A committee formed by the relatives of those aboard the missing Malaysia Air Boeing 777 has blamed the airline and the Malaysian government for their deaths. A man representing the group, identified only as Mr. Zhang, read an angry statement in front of cameras early Tuesday morning in Beijing, accusing them of hiding the truth about what happened and delaying the rescue operation. Earlier, Malaysia's Prime Minister Najib Razak confirmed that there was no longer any doubt that Flight 370 went down in the southern Indian Ocean. The plane disappeared on March 8th on a night flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing with 239 people aboard. Of the 227 passengers on the missing flight, 154 were from China. The larger mystery of what happened aboard Boeing 777 is to send it so far off course remains unresolved. You can keep up to date on what's missing on the missing Malaysian passenger jet and what comes next by going to our website. We're at voanews.com. Also in the news, the United States deploying additional military personnel and aircraft to Uganda to support operations to track down the Lord's Resistance Army rebel group. VOA's Grabe Joslow, catching the group's elusive leader, Joseph Kony, may still prove a challenge.
As first reported by the Washington Post, U.S. officials say the military is sending 150 Special Forces personnel and four Osprey tilt-rotor aircraft to assist African forces in operations against the LRA. The new deployment, expected this week, adds to an existing contingent of U.S. Special Forces based in Uganda, working alongside African militaries from the region. Ugandan military spokesman Paddy Nkunda tells VOA the new aircraft will help African forces more quickly dispatch soldiers to the remote areas where the LRA is believed to be hiding.
One of our greatest difficulties, one of our greatest problems has been airlift. Our ability to airlift personnel and material has been limited. But now, with this deployment, it's going to be solved.
The LRA, infamous for forced recruitment of child soldiers and a cult-like Christian-influenced ideology, has declined in recent years to an estimated 250 fighters who travel in bands across Central Africa. The group's leader, Joseph Kony, is wanted by the International Criminal Court for crimes including murder and sexual enslavement. He is thought to be hiding out in the Central African Republic. Casper Agger, a field researcher with the Enough Project, which monitors conflict in the region, says instability in the CAR following a coup last year has created ideal conditions for the group to thrive.
This is the dream scenario for Kony and the LRA. As long as there's instability and conflict in the areas where they are, then it provides, we can say, a smokescreen for them to continue to hide.
Some groups of LRA fighters also reportedly operate in the Democratic Republic of Congo and have been previously active in South Sudan. U.S. forces first deployed to the region in 2011 as military advisors armed only for self-defense. Since then, several of Kony's top commanders have been captured or have defected. Agger says the new deployment could be a game-changer in terms of catching Kony, but cautions against being overly optimistic.
This guy is a survivor, and he's been able to stay alive for all these years. And you can put yourself in a position where you increase your odds of getting Kony, but you also need a lot of luck for it to happen.
The U.S. military has made the counter-LRA operations a major focus of its Africa command. Congress approved $37.5 million for the effort in this year's defense budget. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Health officials are saying an outbreak of hemorrhagic fever linked to the Ebola virus now has killed 59 in Guinea. World Health Organization reports 86 suspected Ebola cases in Guinea, 13 of which have been confirmed by lab results. This outbreak has occurred in the central rural parts of southeastern Guinea. Statement from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders says it is working with Guinea's health ministry to set up isolation areas in the facilities there. The WHO said on its Twitter feed Monday that tests of two suspected cases in the capital, Conakry, have come back negative. Four young Muslims were killed in the Central African Republic capital, Bangui, over the weekend, among them a son and a brother of an important community leader, the mayor of the city's third district. Nick Long reporting now from Bangui.
The bodies of the mayor's son and brother could not be buried at the Muslim cemetery because it is in the neighbouring Boeing district, now controlled by hostile forces. On Sunday, friends and relatives filed past the bodies laid out on white sheets, and hundreds of people attended a brief religious ceremony outside the house. Two other young men were also killed Saturday. All four were part of the Muslim Self-Defense Force. Baladodo tells VOA they were called out three times on Saturday to respond to threats.
C'est le troisième attaque. Le matin, ils ont attaqué vers 6h. Vers 10h30.
The first attack was at 6 a.m., the second at 10:30, and at about 1:30 p.m., he says, his boys went out again. He says African Union peacekeepers arrived on the scene for the first attack, and so did the French peacekeepers at 10 a.m., but they were not there when the third attack came, when the two young men died. A relative, Mahamadou Baba, says the French peacekeepers, known as Sangaris, should have responded more strongly.
Les Sangaris étaient là, donc les ex-FAKA, les anti-Balaka tiraient sur eux ici.
Sangaris were there, he says, and they were fired at by the anti-Balaka militia and by ex-Central African Army soldiers. He says they fired back and advanced to the Boeing district and stayed in the area a couple of hours with their helicopters flying over. But he doesn't understand why the militia fighters weren't dislodged. We're astonished, he says, that there's no permanent presence of Sangaris or of the African Union Mission MISCA on that side of our district, because that's the hotspot where most of the attacks come from. There are only some 10,000 to 15,000 Muslims left in Bangui, out of an estimated 150,000 before communal violence flared last year. And nearly all of them are forced to live in a ghetto, the so-called Kilometre 5 area of the 3rd arrondissement. A spokesman for the French mission, Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Mollard, tells VOA that while the Sangaris do not have a base in the 3rd arrondissement, the mission has a permanent presence and has patrols there night and day. MISCA, he points out, does have a base in the district. A MISCA officer acknowledged that their base is not on the side facing the Boeing district, which local people say is the front line. Asked why the international forces are not permanently at this hot point, Lieutenant Colonel Mollard said the CAR is a country of rumours, and while local people may perceive threats as coming from Boeing District, the attackers might in fact be from another district. He confirmed there has been a resurgence of tension in Bangui in the past few days. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
United States has criticized an Egyptian court's decision to impose death sentences against 529 members of the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood movement, calling the move shocking. U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf said Monday it seems impossible that the hundreds of defendants could be tried in accordance with international standards in only 2 days. VOA's Elizabeth Arrett has more from Cairo.
The condemned were convicted of killing a policeman, attacking others, and destroying property. The sentencing came after just 2 court sessions and before the defendants' lawyers say they were permitted to make their case. The majority was condemned in absentia, with fewer than 200 of those on trial in court. 16 suspects were acquitted. An appeal is permitted, and given the rushed circumstances of the trial, human rights and legal experts believe the verdict is unlikely to stand. Even members of the government-linked National Council for Human Rights condemned the verdict. Member Nasser Amin wrote on Twitter, "The court ruling will be overturned as soon as the defendants demand a retrial." Other legal rights advocates described it as a disaster and a scandal. Many of those on trial were arrested during fighting in the southern province of Minya, where the trial was held, after security forces dispersed Muslim Brotherhood protest camps last August in Cairo. Hundreds, possibly more, died in the crackdown, most of them supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood and Mohamed Morsi, Egypt's first freely elected leader. Thousands of Morsi's supporters have been jailed since. Caught up in the crackdown are several journalists, including Australian journalist Peter Grest, Egyptian-Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed of the Qatar-based Al Jazeera network. They're on trial in a Cairo court charged with aiding what the government considers the terrorist Muslim Brotherhood. The defendants deny the charges, saying they were simply reporting the news. Grest's brother, Mike Grest, was at the court as the trial continued Monday.
We don't believe that the prosecution will be able to present any evidence to substantiate any of their charges. And more importantly, I'm hoping that another court date gets set down sooner rather than later.
The men were arrested late last year in a case that has attracted denunciations from media rights groups and others around the world. Monday's court proceedings come as Egyptian officials say the campaign for a permanent replacement for Morsi, himself on trial in several other court cases, will begin in the coming days. Egyptian officials have put strong restrictions on media coverage, leaving Egyptian news dominated by praise of the military-backed government, in particular defense minister and widely assumed future presidential candidate General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Anger over Morsi's 1 year in power remains high among many Egyptians, who blame him and his Brotherhood supporters for their often violent exclusion from Egypt's political process and attempting to impose a narrowly based Islamist rule. Publisher and political commentator Hisham Qasim.
The Brotherhood decided to step out of the process. You know, it's them that should be asked to be inclusive.
But any attempts at bringing the group and its millions of supporters back into the political fold will likely be harder after Monday's verdicts. Elizabeth Arendt, VOA News, Cairo.
Libya says it will release the crew of a renegade oil tanker that was stopped by the U.S. Navy and returned to Libya. Federal prosecutors said Monday that the crew is still being investigated, but he said it is clear they were operating at gunpoint. He said 3 Libyan militia members who were aboard the vessel will continue to be detained for their role in the incident. Rebels illegally boarded the ship earlier this month in the Libyan port of Sidra and forced the crew to fill it with oil and set sail.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Looking ahead to the U.S. congressional election set for November, Republicans are increasingly confident they will make gains, especially in the democratically controlled Senate. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports there is a growing consensus among experts that 2014 is shaping up as a good year for Republicans and a difficult year for Democrats.
Lawmakers from both political parties and the White House are increasingly focused on the November midterm elections, when all 435 members of the House of Representatives are at stake and 36 of the 100 U.S. Senate seats. At the moment, most political analysts say it's likely Republicans will hold or add to their majority in the House, and they also have an excellent chance of gaining the 6 additional seats they need to win a majority in the Senate, now controlled by Democrats. Adding to the Republican advantage is that several Democrats are either retiring or facing tough races in Republican-leaning states, says John Fortier of the Bipartisan Policy Center.
The Senate Republicans have a real opportunity to pick up seats, but they need 6 seats, which is a lot. The good news for Republicans is that many of these seats are in very strongly Republican states.
Fortier also notes that President Barack Obama's low approval ratings in public opinion polls could help Republicans.
The 2 biggest factors underlying a midterm election are how's the economy doing and how's the president in the White House doing. And ultimately, midterm elections don't go very well for the president's party. They tend to go against it. And if the economy's worse, it's even worse. And if the president's unpopular, it's even worse.
Another major factor in November's election campaign will be the public's view of the president's health care law, known as the Affordable Care Act. Republicans plan to highlight their opposition to the law as a major campaign theme, says House Speaker John Boehner.
The truth is you can't fix this law. It needs to be torn up by its roots. You may be tired of hearing about this, but as long as this law is around and making things worse, we're going to keep fighting it.
President Obama is quick to defend the law in speeches around the country and accuses Republicans of having no interest in trying to fix the Health Care Act.
And it's not just to try to improve the law or here's a particular problem with it. No, we just want to scrap it so that millions of people who now have health insurance, we want them to go back to not having health insurance. Well, that's not going to happen.
The president has also been warning Democrats that they need to vote in November, noting Republicans often do better in midterm elections because fewer voters overall turn up at the polls. Analyst Carol Doherty of the Pew Research Center says recent polling does not detect a huge Republican surge at the moment. But he says the voters who turn out for midterm congressional elections, as opposed to presidential elections, tend to be older and whiter than the rest of the electorate, and that benefits Republicans.
What it's showing is that there's no wave election for the Republicans or the Democrats at this point. It looks pretty even, which means that turnout's going to be a big factor, and Republicans in midterms do pretty well in turnout.
A Republican takeover of the Senate would set the stage for more legislative gridlock in the final 2 years of the Obama presidency, says longtime political analyst Tom DeFrank of the National Journal. He was a guest on VOA's Issues in the News program.
If he loses the Senate in November, he'll be reduced to governing by veto, denying Republicans what they want to do. I think it's gridlock and damage control the rest of the way.
Republicans last controlled both houses of Congress during the administration of President George W. Bush. They lost control of both chambers to Democrats in the 2006 congressional midterm elections, but regained a majority in the House in 2010. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. federal jury has convicted 5 former employees of imprisoned investment manager Bernard Madoff on charges they helped their boss hide scams that cheated investors out of billions of dollars. Madoff is serving a 150-year prison term after pleading guilty to the fraud known as a Ponzi scheme, decades-long scam which inflated investment earnings and cost investors nearly $20 billion, collapsed during the 2008 global financial crisis. List of victims included some of the biggest names in the United States, including retired baseball icon Sandy Koufax, Hollywood director Steven Spielberg, actor Kevin Bacon, entertainer Zsa Zsa Gabor, and talk show host Larry King. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to The Voice of America today for International Edition. Good to have you with us. A reminder, you can always find us on the Internet at voanews.com. Hope you'll stay with us. The latest world news is coming up shortly. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Tuesday.
This is Today in History. On March 25th, 1306, Robert the Bruce became King of Scotland. A famous warrior, Robert led Scottish forces in the Wars for Scottish Independence against England. He is still considered one of Scotland's national heroes. In 1655, Dutch mathematician and scientist Christian Huygens discovered Saturn's largest moon, Titan. In 1807, the Slave Trade Act became law, abolishing the slave trade in the British Empire. In 1901, the Daimler Motor Company of Germany built a car that took the automotive industry beyond the realm of the horseless carriage. Built for automobile dealer and racing enthusiast Emil Jelinek, the new owner asked Daimler to name the car after his daughter, Mercedes. In 1911, a fire at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City killed 146 garment workers, mostly young women. It was one of the worst industrial accidents in American history. In 1939, America's premier recorded music magazine, Billboard, introduced a music chart for country music, at the time known as hillbilly music. In 1949, the Soviet Union deported thousands of people from Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania to remote areas of the USSR in a program of forced collectivization. On this day in 1954, the Radio Corporation of America began mass production of color television sets for the general public. The TV screen was tiny by today's standards, and the sets sold for $1,000. On this day in 1957, France, West Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg established the common market, a major step in Europe's movement toward economic and political union. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The ancient spring festival of Nowruz is currently being celebrated by millions around the world, including Iranians, Kurds, Afghans, Azeris, Americans, and the peoples of Central Asia. Secretary of State John Kerry has sent his best wishes to them for a healthy and prosperous new year. All who celebrate Nowruz remember that it is not just an ancient tradition dating back over 3,000 years, but a time of renewal and hope, said Mr. Kerry. This season, we reflect on the shared humanity that binds us together. As he has in past years, President Barack Obama used the occasion to speak directly to the people and leaders of Iran.
Since taking office, I've offered the Iranian government an opportunity. If it meets its international obligations, then there could be a new relationship between our two countries, and Iran could begin to return to its rightful place among the community of nations.
Last year, Mr. Obama said, the Iranian people made their voices heard when they elected Hassan Rouhani as their president, a man who pledged to strengthen the economy, improve the lives of the Iranian people, and engage constructively with the international community. Since then, for the first time in more than 30 years, a president of the United States and a leader of Iran have spoken together, noted Mr. Obama. Now the United States and its partners are engaged in intense negotiations with Iran, attempting to find a comprehensive solution that resolves the world's concerns with the Iranian nuclear program.
A comprehensive agreement on the nuclear issue and an Iran that upholds universal rights at home and abroad would help move Iran along the new path that so many Iranians seek.
That path, said President Obama, will mean opportunities for Iranians to trade and forge ties with the world, more economic growth and jobs, more opportunities for students to travel abroad and build new partnerships that will help realize Iran's incredible potential. If Iran seizes this moment, Mr. Obama said, this Nowruz could mark not just the beginning of a new year, but a new chapter in the history of Iran and its role in the world, including a better relationship with the United States and the American people, rooted in mutual interest and mutual respect.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.